The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Joanna LaForgia from the North Carolina Reading Service. And for the next half hour, I will be presenting content from the May issue of Southern Living magazine. This week, we will start, as we always start with our magazines, with the article in the front, the editor's essay, Life at SL. And then we'll go on to The Grumpy Gardener. And then maybe one of our feature articles about Barbara Kingsolver's hurricane story. Okay. First, the front cover of our new issue. It is a photo of a large two-story white house. Appears to be Cape Cod or colonial in design. It's white clapboard with a white brick chimney on the outside and a white brick bottom. Clapboards on the top. And it has a dark brown shingled roof. It has light green, very like a mint green, shutters on the upper windows. And the windows on the extension in the front, little dormer it appears to be. They have light green shutters, and that matches the front door, which has a 9-paned window on the top half. It's a very soft pale green. And this house is in the shade of a huge tree. I'm not going to try guessing. It could be an oak tree, but we can't see it well enough. It's really it's a large tree, and it's much taller than the house, and it puts it in shade. And in the foreground, in front of the house, there are white hydrangea bushes. A white picket fence is off to the side and back in the background. And also a very long stockade fence beyond that fence. The white picket gate. White picket fence is a gate. And there are also low green shrubs along a walk that goes across the front of the house. I imagine it comes from the driveway or somewhere on this street, but it's going across the front of the house to the front door there. And that walk is between these low green shrubs and some rather tall white hydrangea bushes that come just about to the bottom of the windows. That's about how tall they are. And there are not one but two dogs on the front lawn. Can't make out the breeds. Might be mixed. But they're predominantly white. One has a brown face and some black markings on its back and tail. And the other is all white with just a little black saddle, sort of, looks like, there, marking around on his back where a saddle would be if he were a horse. The print from the top to bottom. Southern Living, Outdoor Living, Our Best Ideas for Porches, Gardens, and Curb Appeal. Beside the tree, it says a dramatic makeover in Dallas, talking about that house. And across the bottom, Cameron, Carmen. Carmion, that's C-A-R-M-E-O-N, Carmion Hamilton's Backyard Escape. Texas Hill Country's Cutest Town. And Barbara Kingsolver's Hurricane Story. And then it says May 2025. All right. And here we go with our Life at SL. SL as in Southern Living. And this is in every issue. It starts every issue. And it's written by the editor. And it has a small photograph, not even an eighth of the page. And it is a photo of that looks like, we'll hear about who they are, but they are called Landon and Sid in the SL podcast studio. The younger man has a He has long, shoulder-length, dark brown hair, and he's wearing frameless glasses, kind of rectangular. And he's smiling. He has a mustache and beard. And he's wearing an oatmeal-colored shirt with an collared shirt with an oatmeal-colored sweater over it, long-sleeve sweater over it. And in the background are curtains that would be for soundproofing, it appears to be, some soundproofing material and wires and maybe the a mic stand. Can't see for sure, a black pole there. And then slightly beside and slightly his right shoulder is behind the young man is a middle-aged man with brown hair and glasses with a dark brown frame. Both men are smiling, and this man is wearing a blue shirt, and this must be Sid Evans, the editor-in-chief of Southern Magazine, Southern Living Magazine. And he's wearing dark red jacket, light blue shirt, and they're photographed from the waist up. All right. Life at SL, and it starts, as usual, with a quote. This one is from the actress Reese Witherspoon, and the quote is, "My mother always said, if you want to get something done, ask a Southern woman to do it." And the essay begins, "What's that accent? There's more than one way to sound Southern. When I left Memphis to attend college in Connecticut a long time ago, I got a lot of grief about my accent. In high school, I did not even know I had one. But up north, it became a source of amusement at parties. My friends would ask me to pronounce certain words. Hey, Sid, say, I want a slice of pie. Other times, a simple phrase like, come on, y'all, would be enough to crack them up. It didn't help that my drawl got even stronger after I'd had a beer or two, a condition that stayed with me all these years later. Now, after more than a decade in Alabama, I sometimes get the opposite reaction. Longtime locals can tell I didn't grow up here. I don't know what they're noticing when I talk, but there's something about my pronunciation that gives me away. Maybe I've gotten too citified. Maybe the vowels aren't long enough. Or maybe they can hear a Tennessee Volunteers fan from a mile away. Whatever the case, we don't all sound the same down here. Spend a few days with the Southern Living staff, and you'll detect all sorts of variations if you listen closely. Nella Bailey Mago, co-host of our Ask Grumpy podcast, probably has the strongest accent of us all. She grew up in Winona, Mississippi. Winona, as she says it. And has that slow country sound that tells you she's not in a hurry. Kimberly Holland, who wrote The Great Southern Slaw Trail on page 90, comes from the hills of North Alabama, where they talk a little faster. And then there's my colleague, Holly Belk, a coastal Georgian who can stretch out my one-syllable name more than anyone I know. In her voice, it sounds more like Seed. When author Seed, emphasis on the first part of that syllable, listeners, Seed. When author and social media star Landon Bryant, known for his Instagram account, @LandonTalks, visited our offices recently, turned to fix and to publish a book on page 26, he recorded a video with senior editor Ivy Odom to see if they said certain words the same way. They went over flashcards with pecan, azalea, oil, praline, all of which can sound different depending on where you're from. Ivy grew up in Moultrie, Georgia, where they call the sugary candy a praline. But in Landon's hometown of Laurel, Mississippi, It's a praline. For some reason, southern accents have been back in the news lately. Studies have been done saying that our way of talking is fading with each passing generation. That may be true, but there are plenty of folks who haven't gotten the memo, and I hope they never do. Last fall, on our Biscuits and Jam podcast, I spoke to Leanne Morgan, a comedian from Tennessee who's drawing sellout crowds all over the country. She's another one who calls me Seeyid, and she makes no attempt to hide her drawl, which is thick as molasses. Some people have accused Leanne of faking her accent, but her response is, "Why in the world would anyone want to sound like this?" And listeners, I'm not saying that's what she sounds like. That's just my attempt to imitate her. And that's the end of the our essay by Sid Evans, editor-in-chief. And now, let's get to our another feature that's in every magazine, the Grumpy Gardener. And by the way, listeners, the previous essay referred to two articles, one about how to publish a book and the other called The Great Southern Slaw Trail. And we'll be sure to get to those, if not this episode, the next episode. Okay? All right. And now the Grumpy Gardener. The cartoon that starts this feature off, listeners, is one of a courtroom. And it has someone, the person at the podium, I was going to call him a judge, but he seems to be someone up at the podium. Maybe it's not a courtroom. It's just something with an American flag and some sort of seal on the wall behind the American flag. And we've got in this cartoon four people. Three are reporters in the foreground. Actually, one reporter, she's a woman in a purple suit, and she's writing something on a pad. And then there's a cameraman in a green shirt, gray trousers. He's got red hair, huge camera that he's holding. And then a shorter, balding man in a suit holding a microphone. And they're standing before a dead plant. It's just a long, looks like a small tree, actually, but just has four branches and no leaves, and it says R.I.P., like a little gravestone in front of it. And then just behind that is a huge, it's an elephant, a huge elephant with tusks, sitting in a chair that's obviously too small for this elephant. And then behind the elephant is another one of those dead trees in a flower pot with a R.I.P., short little R.I.P. stone. And then at the podium, someone who I thought was the Grumpy Gardener, who is Steve Bender, by the way. I think I might have misnamed him earlier. All right, and he is saying, whether it's him or not, he has red hair, glasses, red mustache. Excuse me. He's wearing a long-sleeved collared blue shirt, pointing to the elephant's tusks, and he is saying, "You're lucky I don't take your tusks." And the caption of the cartoon is outraged at such carelessness. Grumpy addresses the elephant in the room. Oh, I am meant to believe the elephant, poor elephant, ate all the leaves off those trees, or his tusks scraped them off. Okay, Grumpy Gardener by The Grumpy Gardener by Steve Bender. And it says, "Every tree I plant," note to Grumpy. "Every tree I plant in my backyard dies. First I tried a magnolia. It died. I replaced it with a maple. That died too. So then I went with a crepe myrtle. Yep, it died. What the heck is going on?" Signed, Jeff. Excuse me. "Before I answer, let's address the elephant in the room. You planted two trees in the same place and they didn't make it. So then you planted a third and it croaked too. Does that follow any rational school of thought? stop putting trees in that spot. They clearly don't like it. Maybe the soil is too dry or wet. Or your high schooler could be pouring used motor oil there. Perhaps the hole is a portal to Hades. It really doesn't matter what's causing it. Find somewhere else to grow a tree. And remember, the pointy end goes up and the roots go down. And then in parentheses, it says, too harsh, readers? We'll let you decide, listeners. The next one, freaky earwigs. Oh. I planted two lupines for the first time. Someone told me that when you prune back the flower stalk, you need to sprinkle 7, and this is capital S-E-V-I-N, in the stalk hole, or earwigs will move in. Those bugs freak me out. So that's terrible news. Is it true? Signed, Amy. Earwigs are terrible, Amy. I will never forget the horror when a tyrannical villain slipped one in the ear of Commander Chekov in Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. But in your case, forget about adding the 7 insecticide. Use bacon grease instead. Just kidding. Lupines have been getting along fine for millennia without pesticides. Plus, you should let these short-lived perennials go to seed to ensure new ones every spring. So just leave the stalks. Fungus isn't fun. How can I get rid of fungus in my zoysia lawn without using any chemicals? Signed, Joanne. First, you have to figure out what the problem is. Try Googling zoysia fungus and see if you recognize the disease in the photos. Then you need to consider what may be encouraging it. This could be too much shade. Zoysia likes full sun. Or too much water. It prefers well-drained soil that doesn't stay wet. Buildup of thatch, dead stems of grass on the soil line. Too much fertilizer. You should feed it once in the spring and a second time in the summer. Or mowing it at the wrong height. Cut your lawn at 1.5 inches tall. When it's given the proper growing conditions, zoysia needs little care. But serious diseases like brown patch will require a fungicide. Next, weird coneflowers. A number of my purple coneflowers are blooming green. What does this mean? Are they diseased? Signed, Mindy. Indeed they are, Mindy. The culprit is aster yellows, a malady caused by an organism called a phytoplasma that's spread by leafhoppers. It can affect more than 300 different plants, including asters, marigolds, zinnias, and chrysanthemums. But I see it most frequently on purple coneflowers, Echinacea purpurea. The telltale signs are blooms with green petals and or stalked little green flowers growing from the central cone. The disease is systemic and there is no cure. Infected plants gradually decline and die. It's best to pull them up and throw them away to prevent leafhoppers from spreading the phytoplasma anywhere else. Perfect timing. I have a flowering almond that has gotten out of control. When should I prune it? Thanks so much for your wise advice about so many things, Carolyn. You're welcome, Carolyn. I'm glad to hear that crypto investment I suggested has paid off handsomely. As for your flowering almond, cut it back as soon as it finishes blooming so it has plenty of time to make buds for next year. This also goes for other spring flowering shrubs such as forsythia, weigela, spirea, pearlbush, viburnum, mock orange, lilac, and azalea. And that's the end of the letters. We have here Grumpy's Gripe of the Month to finish us off. And this is, of course, accompanied by that little cartoon of grumpy Steve Bender at his typewriter, which is perched on the top of an upside-down red wheelbarrow. Grumpy sitting on a chair, and there's a little flower that's kind of smiling, almost laughing at him, and it has long green leaves. One is holding the paper and the typewriter, and the other has its green leaf around his shoulders like a hug. And here is Grumpy's Cry of the Month. I love perennial flowers and buy new ones every year. Recent additions include Stokes Aster, Sedum, Pink Gora, and Penstemon. I prefer starting off with something rather small in a pint or quart container and watching it grow. But just try to find one now. Seems like every pot is the size of a casket and just as easy to put into the ground. Listen, garden centers, beneath the 6 inches of good soil I've managed to cultivate in my yard over 25 years, lies a hardened clay bunker that requires a jackhammer to penetrate. I'm too old for that. Give me back my pints and quarts. I am not paying $30 for dirt and two dislocated shoulders. And that's it for the Grumpy Gardener this year. This month, excuse me. Oh, oops, there's that. We forgot. I forgot the, on the right column, the after note that Steve Bender usually has. And this is the Know Your Plant section. And there is a white pot that has a bunch of thin red leaves, very thin red leaves that are sprouting out. And it seems like it's tall. And it's called Charlie Boy or Cordyline, Cordyline. And it says, beautiful and carefree, this striking foliage plant provides a colorful pop from spring to fall, and maybe beyond. Your front porch is the focal point of your house. Why not sharpen that focus by adorning the entrance with an eye-catching potted plant? This is my choice for our home this year. Charlie Boy Cordyline, or Cordyline australis, Charlie Boy, from the Southern Living Plant Collection. Growing 2 to 3 feet tall and wide, it forms an upright fountain of spear-shaped pink and burgundy leaves that do not fade in the heat. Adding disease-resistant beacon coral impatience to the planter makes a great combo. All Charlie Boy needs is full to part sun and well-drained soil. It's cold hardy in USDA zones 8B to 10. To overwinter it in cooler areas, move it indoors before a freeze. Signed, Steve Bender. And now we're moving on to The Heart of Appalachia by Barbara Kingsolver. And she, listeners, you may know, is a best-selling author. She wrote The Poisonwood Bible, among many other books. A Southern author. I believe she's from Virginia. After Hurricane Helene tore through the region last fall, a resilient community came together to bring it back to life. The Heart of Appalachia by Barbara Kingsolver, and illustrations by Joel Kimball, photographs by Robbie Caponetto. This begins with a double-page photograph of the author, Barbara Kingsolver. And the background is several evergreen trees, it appears to be, and the window of a stone porch looks out at them. Just inside the stone porch, leaning against one of the stone columns, and there's a window just to her left. It's also looking outside, so it's probably an outdoor porch of some sort. And Barbara Kingsolver is there. She has silver and dark gray hair, and she's wearing glasses that are framed just at the top. She's looking out the window at the evergreens, and she's wearing a denim shirt that's open with a red long-sleeved T-shirt top. Just under it, and dark denim jeans. And she has her arms folded just beneath her chest. And the caption says, King Solver at her Washington County, Virginia home a few months after Helene struck. She ripped down forests and left whole towns in shambles, reaching far past the usual coastal stomping grounds. She came inland to take everything from families and farmsteads. Where I live in southwestern Virginia, we're hundreds of miles from any ocean. Appalachia has seen hard times, but we don't usually worry about hurricanes. And half of this picture, half of this page, listeners, is what I just read, and just the other half is a drawing of just beneath a bridge, a washed out highway going under a bridge, and there are trees that have crushed three cars, one white, one red, one green, crushed, and one blue, excuse me, that crushed the trees, and lampposts have fallen. Trees have crushed those cars, and another green car is half on and half off the bridge. And in the foreground are piles of broken wood and shards of who knows what else, and a green truck abandoned there. And it begins with also a shadow of a drawing on the next page has a silhouetted couple in a amber-lit window at night. You can just see their silhouettes, a woman and a man, standing beside each other, close together, and rain pouring down, slanting diagonally. And they're framed by some trees that are half fallen. The window is framed. We'll just have time to start this. It was only because of family members in Florida that I tracked weather news on Friday, September 27th, while making breakfast for a houseguest who was headed out soon. We lingered over coffee laughing as the lights flickered and the wind howled. I tried to believe the pounding rain was good news after our disastrously hot summer. But when the house went dark with a final shudder, our friend took the cue to exit. Without a cell signal to guide her, my husband and I led her to the interstate ourselves. Minutes later, we came back to a home barricaded by fallen trees. And that is the time, our time for this episode, listeners. We hope you enjoyed it, and we hope you'll listen next time. I'm Joanna LaForgia, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired, and this broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org, under Triangle Bulletin Board. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. Once more, that's 919-832-5138. So long until next time.